Well, welcome everyone to the 7 Steps to Awakening. Oh, and I hear that maybe more people are listening on the radio than being in the room. Okay, that's good. Tonight, I am going to be starting with quote number 735, which I will put that link in the room. But I'll tell you what, if you're not in the room and you want to join in and you are listening on the radio, you can go to my 7 Steps Journal website, which is rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And that 7 in that is just the digit 7. It's not spelled out. So rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get there, if you look at the menu bar, you'll see where step 3 is. Click on step 3 and then choose I. I lets you go to the journal entries from 726 to 750. So rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, step 3, choice I. And then once you make choice I, you'll be able to find number 735, and you'll be able to click on that. And again, I'm putting that link here in the sanctuary for anyone who is here. And as you all know, what I like to do is start with a bit of music. Here's a song. This song that I'm about to play, a lot of people may not think of as a spiritual song, but you know, you can listen to a song that's not a spiritual song and it can have a meaning for you that maybe nobody else hears in it, but for you it's a spiritual song. So let me just tell you the meaning that this song had for me. It was a very important meaning once, and that way when you're listening, even if the song isn't about that at all, maybe you'll hear it. But some of you may have heard the story about how about the same time I started the spiritual path in April of 2004, right about that same time, my boyfriend, we were both living in Massachusetts, my boyfriend got transferred to Colorado, and he asked me if I would come with him. And I told him I would, but if I was going to be giving up my job and all of that, that I, when I got to Colorado, I didn't want to have to work. And in fact, it was my plan that I would just be a housewife and study A Course in Miracles. And so we made that plan, and that seemed to be the plan for a few months. But then I think it was around September when I found out that he wasn't going to go through with the plan. This is the short version of the story. There's a longer version, but I found out that he didn't want to get married. And so I ended up, you know, I'd already given my notice at work, but I went in and told them I wasn't leaving, I wasn't getting married. And it's so funny, the day that I went in to tell them I wasn't leaving and I wasn't getting married, they actually had a surprise wedding shower for me that day planned. So here they have the shower planned in the afternoon at around 3 or something. I come in the morning and tell them I'm not leaving and I'm not getting married. The longer version of the story is, though, I was actually quite happy because the day after Ron and I had this conversation, I turned the course over to my next lesson, and it was, if I defend myself, I am attacked. But in that lesson, it talks about how, you know, the healed mind doesn't plan, and how your plans are a defense and therefore your plans are an attack. And I was very, very, very happy, actually, because I recognized this getting married and moving to Colorado thing as my plan. And I felt the fact that the plan didn't happen meant that God had big plans for me that I didn't know about. And in fact, that turned out to be true. But I was very happy to have been made available for God's plan. However, so I went forward, continuing with my job, and my job, you know, like many jobs, was somewhat difficult. There were some very difficult relationships. I was a director, one of the leadership team there in the organization, and I'd been through tough negotiations with all the other directors in my 9 years of being there, and it seemed like I had grievances against everyone, and they had grievances against me, and they had grievances against each other. Kind of a tough work environment. Maybe like Helen and Bill were experiencing a tough work environment. And I remember one day, after this whole plan of mine had fallen apart, and I'm back at work, and it was just a tough day. And I even remember where I was. I was getting ready to go from the first floor to the second floor, getting ready to step on the first couple of stairs at the bottom of the stairwell. And I just asked in my mind, why do I have to stay here? in this tough work environment, why do I have to stay here? And the answer came in a song from Frank Sinatra, the theme from New York, New York. And the answer was, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. And I knew immediately that my workplace was my forgiveness schoolhouse. And that I wasn't to try and run from that tough work environment to an easier, what I perceived to be an easier life, that I was to stay there and practice the course right there where I'd been for 9 years. So this is that song. This is the song that the Holy Spirit answered me with when I asked, why do I have to stay here? And by the way, I fully accepted the answer, and I embraced my workplace as my schoolhouse, and made great progress in a very short amount of time because I accepted the answer and had no resistance against it. So here we go. Frank Sinatra, the theme from New York, New York.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
Actually, I wasn't leaving.
I want to be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York, I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep. And find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York.
Here we go.
If I can
in my case, it was up to you, private health care system in Boston. All top of the list.
King of the hill.
That's us.
A number one. These little town blues.
Littleness. Blues. So, and just the short version of that story, about 9 months later, when I did leave under guidance, you know, I was asked to leave my job and move, as you all know. So when I did leave under guidance, by that time I had practiced forgiveness so thoroughly on the situations and the relationships at work that in my last few months there, these same peers, these same directors that I had so many grievances with, and they with me and with each other, they were coming and asking for private time with me. They wanted to have one-on-ones with me because they saw me changing. They saw me becoming freer. They saw me becoming happier, and they wanted to know what was up. And it seems like the last couple of months, I spent most of my time in one-on-one meetings with my peers, talking about A Course in Miracles. Also going out to lunch with people all of the time. And in the end, there was a great big going away party. So, you know, sometimes when we're in the tough situations, that's exactly where we can make the progress. You know, now, again, you always have to follow your guidance. You know, the mind likes to bring up the questions like, what does that mean if a man's beating you that you should stay with the man? You know, no. In fact, I think that probably the reason in most cases that people stay with a man that's beating them is because they're believing their unworthiness. They're not setting themselves free. They are stuck in the mud of the I am bad thought, and the situation is repeating itself over and over. But we do have to face, you know, reasonable, tough situations and look at why those situations are tough for us, find out what's happening in our mind. You know, I love the question, would a truly enlightened person be bothered by this? If the answer is no, then it must be something in my mind that's causing me to be bothered with this. And I go and look at it. What in my mind is causing me to be offended, angry, hurt, fearful, right? And use every single thing that comes, which is what I did in this work environment. And it's amazing how quickly the healing can happen if we really apply ourselves fully. So that's what that song means to me. So as you can see, even though it's really kind of a grandiosity song, if you take it literally, he's talking about going to New York and being a number one, right? A big fish in a big city. It listens with the right mind. You know, it was very helpful to me. It encouraged me to apply the course right where I was. All right. So, as I mentioned, we are here for the 7 Steps to Awakening. We are going to start with quote number 735, and let me read that quote to you from the 7 Steps to Awakening. The abandonment of notions is the supreme good. The abandonment of notions is the supreme good. And to me, that actually fits very much with what I was just talking about, which isn't surprising, right? It's the way this kind of works out if you allow spontaneity to happen. I don't remember specifically all of the forgiveness stories that I went through in that workplace. I could go back and look at my journal from that year because I was journaling about everything. For the first three, maybe even 4 years that I was on this spiritual path, I was journaling on a daily basis. So I was journaling about everything, and everything I went through is captured in that journal. Also, much of what I went through is captured on the Holy Spirit Guides website as well, in those early audios where I talk about it. Now my memory kind of fades. But I remember a few things. Like, I remember there was this one guy. I won't say his name, even though none of you know him. I still won't say his name. But there was this one guy. He was actually a manager. He was not a director. He was a manager. But he had a reputation for being very lazy and never getting anything done. And as the story went, and I believe the story fully, the reason he was there is he had a friendship that went back many, many years with one of the vice presidents. And so the vice president was protecting his job. And so he had this job as the manager of a small department, even though he never did anything and could never get anything done. And just like everybody else, I didn't like him. None of us liked him. We all were working our behinds off, right? So we didn't like the guy who didn't have to do anything. And I don't remember what course lesson I was contemplating that day, but I was contemplating a course lesson, and it was probably one of the ones that you have to bring it to your mind like every hour or every half hour or every 15 minutes, because I was contemplating the lesson while walking out of the cafeteria with my tray of food in my hand at lunch. So I was, you know, it must have been that time, you know, that half hour or whatever, and I was saying it. And as I was contemplating the lesson, something about that lesson, the way it was interpreting in my mind, was that it wasn't that God didn't love me, it was that I didn't love God. That's kind of how it was interpreting in my mind as I was contemplating it. And I remember being somewhat shocked at that idea, because I, of course, thought that I loved God. That's why the heck I was on a spiritual path, right? Because I wanted God. And here I am contemplating the course and coming up with, I'm the one who doesn't love God. And so I asked a question in that about, like, how could I don't remember the exact question now. I remember the answer. The question was something like, you know, well, how could I love God then if I'm not loving God? You know, how can I love God? And my eyes landed on this man, this lazy, good-for-nothing, protected man. And I heard clearly, you know, in an intuitive way, not in words. I wasn't hearing words yet. But I heard clearly that there was one, meaning there was God. You know, there was one. And I knew that if I couldn't love him, I wasn't loving God. That I can't say I love God and dislike him, because he was a part of God. And I remember just stopping for a second right there outside the cafeteria door heading into the dining room. And I remember thinking, well, then I'm going to love him. And I walked over to the table where he was, of course, sitting all alone. And I asked him if I could sit with him, and he said yes. And I just put aside all of my ideas that I had carried. I put them aside instantly in this case. All of my ideas that he, in order to be liked, he needed to be like the rest of us and work really hard to earn his money. I mean, those were the ideas. I wasn't putting aside the idea that he maybe was not doing his job, because, you know, I think maybe he wasn't. Or that he wasn't being protected, because I think maybe he was. What I put aside was the idea that it should have been different. And that it needed to be different in order for him to receive my love. Those were the ideas I put aside. That was the arrogance of the ego, right? The arrogance of the ego was, he needs to be as responsible as the rest of us, work as hard as the rest of us, or he does not deserve our love. He deserves our judgment. And that's not true. So that's an example of a notion that I abandoned. One example. And I know that there were many. I also remember this other woman that I had a long history of, you know, just different difficult situations with. And I remember every time she would come into my office, it's like the whole history would come in with her. You know, like every time I saw her face. In fact, I remember journaling in my journal, every time I see her face, it all comes back. You know, it just seemed impossible that I could see her face and not remember every difficulty we had had, you know, over the past several years. And I remember journaling with Spirit on that, and I remember Spirit saying. It might be fun later to go back and look up the message, actually. I think I could probably find it. But I remember Spirit saying to me that, you know, a human memory is a part of what comes with being human. You know, like humans remember, that's a part of the human brain. But those memories have nothing to do with now, unless I let them. Unless I bring those memories into the now and say that they matter, they have nothing to do with now, even if I remember them. And there was something about that that clicked with me, something about that where I realized that I was the one bringing the memories in and saying they still mattered, that I was the one giving them meaning. And sure, they might still show up when she walks in. They might still be there in that way. Kind of like if you guys saw the movie A Beautiful Mind, when the main character was a schizophrenic and he let go of the medication because it was causing different problems for his brain, right? So he let go of the medication, but then what he learned to do was he learned to not give meaning to these people that he saw. Not to give meaning to them, not to see them as real. He let them be there, but he didn't give them meaning. And at the end of the movie, as you saw, they were still kind of hanging around in the distance. And that way they were much more faded than they had been for him before. But they were there. And he was able to get by just fine because even though they were there, he wasn't giving them meaning. You see, the same thing can be done with our memories. You know, if we've had a difficult past with a particular person and that person shows up, some of those memories may return. But we don't have to give those memories meaning now. That's where our choice comes in. What are we giving meaning to? We can still allow this present moment to be fresh and we can still go into this present moment. We also have no way of affecting, no way of changing the other person. So if they have all the same memories from their point of view, you know, from their point of view, you're the asshole, right? So they have all the same memories from their side of the story. And we can't make them not give meaning to their memories, right? So they may still be coming in, still be on guard, still ready for the next fight, right? But even if that is happening now, right now, this person is right there, ready to have another fight with me, I can choose to stay with my right mind. And isn't that what the present moment is? Isn't the present moment being tuned in to my right mind fully right now, regardless of what anyone else is doing? So what I learned was that. I learned that when this person came in that I had a difficult history with, to give no meaning to any of the memories that may have come up, and to just tune in fully right now to my intuition, my inner guidance in the moment. And just make sure I stayed right there, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what. You know, don't get pushed off the balance beam. Stay right there. So the notion that I let go of in that particular healing was that the past inherently had meaning. You see, that's what I thought. The past inherently had meaning. In fact, one thing that I used to get really annoyed at is when course students would say, it didn't happen. I'd say, it did happen. It did happen. She did this and blah, 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 you know. And I'm not going to, I still don't want to, you know, I still think sometimes there's a form of denial maybe and it didn't happen unless somebody is really, really clear on the fact that what they are is untouchable awareness. Then they know that there was no effect on untouchable awareness. I think most of the time when people are saying those things, they're just speaking from intellectual knowledge and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. But what I learned is that the past does not inherently have a meaning. Even past memories are fresh in this moment now. The past is completely over, and even my memory of the past is fresh right now. And right now, when that memory shows up, I can choose to give it meaning, and I can act from that meaning that I've given, or I can choose to see it as meaningless, over, and having no bearing on this present moment. So the notion that I let go of was the belief, and this was a belief until I saw differently, that the past inherently had meaning. So just a couple examples of what I remember. And again, there were multiple forgivenesses during this period of time. And by the way, notice I used the word forgiveness, and that's because I was practicing A Course in Miracles at the time, and A Course in Miracles uses that word, forgiveness, right? But forgiveness has kind of an outward sound to it, because that's the way we usually think of it, like you're forgiving someone outside of you. And in each of my cases, every time I've practiced forgiveness, I have not ever once forgiven someone outside of me. I have always abandoned a notion that I was carrying around that was causing that grievance or causing that judgment. I abandoned a notion that I was carrying around, that I was believing, that I was repeating over and over again. For example, you should perform in a certain way, be responsible, meet your deadlines, work as hard as the rest of us, or you're not worthy of our love. That was a notion. I let go of the notion. The person can be exactly as they are, and there's no block to my love. Or the idea that the past inherently has a meaning, it matters right now, and because of the past that we have always had together, I need to be defensive and on guard and ready with you. If I realize that the past has no inherent meaning, that I am giving the past all of the meaning it has for me now, I let go of that notion, I'm free. I'm open. I'm available for inner wisdom to guide me in this moment. So in my case, forgiveness has never had anything to do with anyone or anything outside of me. The word forgiveness literally means what this quote is saying, the abandonment of notions. And notice the quote says, the abandonment of notions is the supreme good. The abandonment of notions is the supreme good. As I look here in the sanctuary at Who's Here Now, I see some of you have taken the Tao Te Ching class that we have as a part of the minister preparation program. But of course, not all of you have. But in the Tao Te Ching class, we look at the Tao as a pendulum. And the way this pendulum works, if I see a problem, for example, let's go back to the employee or the manager that I used to work with who, you know, was lazy, didn't do his job, didn't meet deadlines, etc. You know, if I see a problem and I also see he's protected by one of the vice presidents, and let's imagine that, you know, I think I can fix this by going to the CEO. If I go to the CEO and explain how this vice president is protecting this guy and he never gets his job done, and here's how it's impacting all of these projects, I can probably get them both fired and get somebody new in there and we'll all be happier, right? Well, that's like taking the pendulum and pushing it, I'll say, to the right. Because I think I'm going to achieve good for everybody. And I might even get both of these men fired. And maybe the people who replace them really are much better, you know, in my opinion and everybody else's opinion. And so because I achieved the good that I attempted to achieve, I let go of the pendulum. I stopped pushing it to the right. And when you let go of a pendulum, what happens? It swings back into the opposite direction to an equal degree. And so it doesn't necessarily mean the same problem is born again, but another problem is born. Maybe what happens now is for some reason a lot of key employees leave. They have nothing to do with these other two guys. It's just kind of circumstances. They're getting better job offers, higher pay. Lots of key employees leave. And now none of us can meet our deadlines because we don't have the manpower that we need to do it, right? So what we learn when we study the Tao Te Ching is you can't ever achieve what we call harmony or what could be called the supreme good. You can't ever achieve harmony by trying to fix things from self-will, from your idea of what needs to be fixed. Because whenever you push that pendulum, even if you solve your apparent problem, it's going to swing back into the opposite direction and another problem will be born to replace it. That's why for every disease that's cured, a new disease is born. For every war that ends, a new war begins, right? What we learn in the Tao Te Ching class is the only way to achieve harmony, or what this quote might call the supreme good, is to be the empty Taoist master. Or we could say the one who is abiding as the self, the one who is purely focused on inner guidance and listening to it every step of the way, the fully surrendered person. The empty shell, right? And when you are that, when you are the empty shell, of course, in order to get to the empty shell, you have to abandon all of your notions, right? But when you are that empty shell, then the natural corrective arm of the Tao, which naturally brings everything back into harmony, it can move through you. And it can start to correct things in a way that has no opposite. Because remember, love has no opposite. A still pendulum doesn't have an opposite swing. So if you be still, stay empty, abandon all of your notions about a situation, be, then the situation can be brought into harmony by the universe. That's what this quote is saying. The abandonment of notions is the supreme good. And remember, I talked about in my workplace that, you know, once I heard that song in my mind, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. Once I heard that I accepted that fully and I decided, yes, this place is my forgiveness schoolhouse and that's exactly what I'm going to use it for. And I told you that's exactly what I did. So all I did was, and I remember, it was right around this time. I don't remember if it was before or right after I heard this song in my mind. But I remember I was in a meeting. We had these monthly leadership meetings. And at the monthly leadership meetings, you had all of the directors, the vice presidents, and the CEO, because we were the leadership of the company. And that was about 40 of us. The company had thousands of employees. So there were about 40 of us on the leadership team. And I remember one day sitting there in the leadership meeting and just kind of looking around the table. We had this huge round table we sat at in a conference room. And I was looking around the table, and I honestly thought to myself, there is not one person here that I like. There's not one person sitting at this table that I like. And that was because of 9 years of history with these people. We all had long, this was a company that was able to hold on to its employees for a long time. So we had long histories together. As I abandoned my notions through the forgiveness practice over the next few months, what happened by the time I left, and my guess is it was September-ish. It was September when I heard this song and I accepted my workplace as my schoolhouse. It was June, the following June when I left, so about 9 months later. By the time I left, I sincerely felt that every single person on that team was my beloved friend, and I think they felt that way about me too. This harmony in our relationships came about through the abandonment of all of my notions. And they didn't have to abandon a single notion. right? They weren't practicing forgiveness. I was. I didn't ask a single one of them to change in any way whatsoever. I didn't go up to any one of them and say, you know, I think you and I could get along really well if you just dot, dot, dot. I didn't do any negotiating with anyone. I merely abandoned the notions that were in my mind that were causing my blocks to love. And as I let go of my notions, the relationships all came into harmony. And there may have been a couple people that left the company during the time, too. That may have been a part of bringing all the relationships into harmony. You know, sometimes that's a part of it. Certain people disappear from the scene. I don't remember for sure. You know, I don't have that kind of a memory. But I do know that when I left, I could look around that table, whoever was at that table, and I felt really genuinely in the heart okay with each and every one of them. There was nothing left to be cleaned. The abandonment of notions is the supreme good, quote 735 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. So let me have a quick drink here, and then we'll go see what I wrote in the journal. All right. So I'm going back to my journal, number 735. I wrote this on June 20th, 2013. What is ego? What is the cause of all conflict and all suffering? Isn't it simply attachment to ideas? Why be attached to any idea? What merit is there in attachment to ideas? And I think it was last week or so when I talked to you all about the different ways when I contemplate, the different ways the contemplation may come out. You know, it comes out on paper for me, but it can come out in different ways. And I talked about how sometimes the way the contemplation comes out is inquiry. And inquiry leads to deep looking within myself. So in contemplation of quote number 735, this is what came out on paper was inquiry. And this is an inquiry that each and every one of us can really practice. The first question, what is ego? What is the cause of all conflict and all suffering? Those two questions really go together because, you know, we are told that the ego is the cause of all suffering. You know, that's even in the movie Revolver. If you watch the Revolver movie, there's a scene where Jake Green and his two teachers are on top of a roof doing roof golf. And they're explaining to him about the ego. And they tell him that the ego is the cause of all suffering. Right? Well, what is this ego that is the cause of all suffering? That's the inquiry. And when you practice inquiry, inquiry is not an act of intelligence. When you practice inquiry, you don't go back to what you learned from A Course in Miracles or what you learned from NTI or what you learned from Regina or what you learned from Muji. It's very important, at least in my humble opinion, that when you practice inquiry, you don't go back to anything and answer it with that. You never answer inquiry with the intellectual mind. You never answer inquiry with what you have learned before. You answer inquiry by looking and seeing what's true in your experience right now. I'll say that again. You answer inquiry by looking to see what's true in your experience right now. So it has nothing to do with anything anyone ever said before or that you ever read before. So when I ask the question, what is ego? What is the cause of all conflict and all suffering? Oh, and someone's saying, can you write it, please? You know what I can do? I can post the link again, and you can go and look at it. I would have to get off my roll, stop speaking to type it up, but there's my link. When I ask, what is ego? What is the cause of all conflict and all suffering? The way that I look at that is I look at my most recent upset. That most recent upset could be big, it could be small, it could be what the Course would call a, oh, thank you. We have a little typing here. It could be what the Course calls a mild annoyance, right? But when I'm practicing the inquiry, I look at my most recent upset so that I can bring it into mind very clearly. And then I look into that upset. I look right into it, into the feeling of it. Into the believing that was happening when the upset occurred. And I look to see what caused it. And there isn't an upset that I've ever had that I can't look at and say the cause was an idea or a group of ideas. You know, like I can't love that manager because he's lazy, he doesn't meet his deadlines, he doesn't ever do the things that he's supposed to do, and he's being protected. You know, I can't like him as long as that situation is true. I can't love him as long as that situation is true. He has to change in order for me to love him. You see, those are ideas. Those are ideas. So when I ask the question, what is ego? What is the cause of all conflict and all suffering? The answer that I came up with for myself in my own direct experience is thinking, ideas, beliefs, what I'm holding to. I mean, that's it. That's it. And so this is where the third sentence came from, isn't it simply attachment to ideas? Although that's written in question form, that came from me seeing during the practice of inquiry, during the contemplation. And then the next question is another inquiry. And actually the next two questions go together. Why be attached to any idea? What merit is there in attachment to ideas? Well, the way that I would look at that inquiry for myself, again, I don't want to jump to any intellectual answers that I may have read in a book or heard from a teacher. I feel like, and this is my genuine feeling when I'm in contemplation, I feel like if I jump to the mind and find something that I've learned from a book or from a teacher and write it down, that I'm cheating myself. I'm cheating myself. Because as far as I can tell, the only way to awaken and the only way to heal are through my own genuine experience of this spiritual path. My own genuine experience of seeing what I need to see. My own genuine experience of learning to let go of thoughts that I need to let go of. My own genuine experience of learning to be with feelings that I need to be with. I haven't been able to find anything that I heard or learned from someone else or something else that was directly helpful. Indirectly helpful, yes. Indirectly helpful in that it may have encouraged me to do the work. It may have encouraged me to be with the feeling, or encouraged me to look for what I was believing, or encouraged me to let go of a belief, right? But that's indirect. The only direct benefit I've ever found is from my own direct experience. And contemplation is a part of my direct involvement in the spiritual path. This is me directly experiencing truth or experiencing pointers to truth. So if I answer an inquiry with something I read in a book or something I heard some teacher say, I'm cheating myself because now I'm going to the indirect instead of the direct. And the actual healing, the actual awakening has to be direct. So when I answer an inquiry with myself, I purposefully forget about, you know, in other words, don't give meaning to. Because again, an answer may come into my mind from something I read or something I heard. But remember what I said a while ago, and it's still true here. Memories just show up in the human brain. But I don't have to give that memory any meaning now. So an answer could show up. Maybe something Ken Wapnick said. Maybe something Muji said, right? Maybe something Michael Langford said. But I don't want to give that meaning right now. I don't want to go into believing someone else. I don't want it to be an indirect experience. I want it to be a direct experience. So even though these memories of what I've read or what I've heard may show up when I'm practicing inquiry, I purposefully do not give them meaning now. They do not apply right now. I want to look at my direct experience and see the best answer that I can see right now. And who knows, maybe 3 years from now, I'll practice the same inquiry and I'll see a deeper, more true answer than I do today. That's okay, because I got to be where I am now in order to get there later, right? I got to be genuinely and directly where I am now. So you could say that when we're practicing inquiry, we're not looking for the right answer, although the right answer, the truth is what I mean by the right answer, could arise. We're looking for our best answer now. Remember your teacher always saying, just select the best answer. You guys have heard that, right? Just select the best answer. I'm looking for my best answer in my experience now. And by always finding my best answer now, it's going to lead me inch by inch to the time when the truth as a direct experience is the answer. So, when I ask these questions, why be attached to any idea? What merit is there in attachment to ideas? I look at my experience. I look at my most recent upset. Maybe the last several, if I can remember the last several clearly. I look at the ideas I was believing, and I genuinely ask, what merit is there in these ideas? Now, you know, this would be the same as Byron Katie saying, who would you be without that thought? Or what would your experience be without that thought? It sounds like a different question, but the quality of the question is the same. So if we go back to the manager who's lazy and doesn't meet his deadlines and he's protected by a vice president, right? If we go back to him, if I look in my mind, what value is there in holding to the idea that he has to change in order for me to like him? Can I find any value in that? And I can't. The only thing I can find when I look at that is that I get to continue to be upset. For as long as, you know, as long as things stay as they are, I get to continue to be upset. And I personally don't value that. Or if asking the question the way it came to me, what merit is there in attachment to ideas? If that doesn't work for you, you could try Byron Katie's question, who would you be without that thought? Who would you be without the idea that he needs to change in order for you to like him? Well, gosh, if I didn't have the idea that he needed to change in order for me to like him, well, then I guess I would just like him because there's nothing there blocking my liking. In other words, it's my attachment to idea that's causing my suffering. So again, quote number 735, the abandonment of notions is the supreme good. The abandonment of notions is the supreme good. And as I said, that's my interpretation of forgiveness. It has nothing to do with forgiving anyone or anything. It has everything to do with letting go of whatever notions I am holding on to that is blocking my own experience of love. The abandonment of notions is the supreme good. And then what I wrote in the journal, as I said, was an inquiry which led me to looking. What is the ego? What is the cause of all conflict and all suffering? Isn't it simply attachment to ideas? Why be attached to any idea? What merit is there in attachment to ideas? And again, that just allowed me to really, really look. And in that real looking, what happens if you look very, very deeply like that is you become more willing to let go of your thinking, more willing to let go of your notions, more willing to abandon those notions. And it is through your willingness to abandon them, especially when you see that the only thing they're good for is causing your own suffering. It's through that willingness to abandon those notions that you do. And I don't remember if it was here in the Seven Steps teaching. I think it was last week. It might have been the Guiding Light, but I think it was the Seven Steps teaching where I talked about recently how the reason that I don't get upset, I do occasionally still get upset, but it's very rare compared to, where I was before. There are all kinds of things that happen on a daily basis that would have upset me multiple times during the day that happen now without any upset at all. And this can go on for weeks, right? For weeks it can go on where just things are happening. Now sometimes my button can get pushed deep enough that I will still get upset and then I have to look at that. But most of the time I'm able to just be with whatever is happening, no matter how bad it may look in the mind's judgment. And I mentioned last week that the reason that is, the reason I don't get upset is because I don't want to expend the energy it takes to get upset. I don't want to work that hard. And I compared it to, it's like I'm on the beach in Hawaii. I'm relaxing on the beach in Hawaii. And it may be true that you did not meet a deadline. If we work together, you did not meet a deadline. And maybe there's even some importance in a business way to that deadline. But the fact that you did not meet the deadline, it just doesn't encourage me to want to leave the beach and get back into the war. All right, you didn't meet the deadline. So where are we now and what do we do next? That's the way I deal with it. Okay, so this happened. Now what? It still gets dealt with. But it's not worth leaving the beach. Yeah, like Jim says, is this worth me giving up my peace? And at some point, we just don't want to leave the beach, or we just don't want to leave the peace. We really don't. We just don't want to anymore. And when you don't want to leave your peace anymore, it becomes very, very easy to abandon any notion that would show up to take you away from your peace. They still show up. They still show up. There may still be this thought, he was supposed to do that, right? It may still show up, but it's weak, it's faded, and it's meaningless. Doesn't matter whether he was supposed to do that or not, it's not done, so where are we and what do we do now? I mean, that's it. Here's where we are. What does that mean? How does that affect things? What do we got to do? Right? You just deal with it without leaving your peace. The abandonment of notions is the supreme good. So that leaves us with 6 minutes remaining in this hour. And I think what I am going to do is play a song. And I feel like a Kirtana song. I wish I knew it, because a certain song is actually in my mind, but I'm not super good with sometimes what line is in what song. I got lucky with the New York, New York. I didn't know that one. But, I can remember Cortana singing, but I don't know which song. So I don't know if I'll pick the right one or not. We'll just pick a Cortana song, and if that was the right one, I'll say, that was it. Here was the line I was thinking of. I think this might be it. This song, if it's the right one, you'll hear as you listen to Cortana, you'll hear how it fits very, very much with the teaching we just had as we looked at 735. The name of this song is I Invite Love Here.
Forgive me, I'm sorry, I love you. Thank you for what you reveal. The part of this I share, the false belief I bear, the memory, the wound that wants to heal. Forgive me, I'm sorry, I love you. Thank you for showing your face by challenging my peace. You helped me to release this notion that I'm separate from grace. Knowing peace begins with me.
She is saying, I forget the exact words, but the idea is, thank you for bringing up in me what I needed to see in me. Thank you for bringing up the notion that I needed to see so that I could abandon it. Right? Thank you. So I love that. I love that particular idea in that particular song. Again, that was I Invite Love Here by Cortana. So that concludes our seven steps teaching for this evening.